It's time to have a chat with Leapy Lee. This is our first time to talk after the Brexit, the exit. What will Leapy be thinking? Let's go across to join Leapy now.
Oh, 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 the pain.
Well, here we go then. My first chat with Leapy Lee post-Brexit. So first of all, Leapy, what's your feelings exactly as we feel, as we speak?
They're a little mixed. I, of course, advocated leaving, so in a way it's been a victory. I'm a little disappointed in the reaction of a lot of the media with all the doom and gloom. We need somebody now to come forward with some optimism. The only optimistic one really is Farage. I mean, I've just seen him stand up in the European Parliament there and give him a right earful and say that Canada are now trying to get in touch with us so who can be the first to do deals with us. Australia trying to be the first to do deals with us, you know, so it's all working already. He's just put a very good case forward, but he's the only optimistic one. Every time he says, you know, oh, God, the pound's gone down. Oh, the FTSE's down. Oh, this is down. Oh, you know, we need some optimism. We need somebody with some confidence to bounce up. You see, in my opinion, I actually did say in my column, you know, that I would vote to stay in a renegotiated European community. But of course, Jesus Christ, I can't remember the name of their Prime Minister now.
Cameron.
He's not even gone yet. Cameron didn't get that, you know. He came back with, all he got was a 4-year ban on people receiving benefits, and even that was a bit grey, you know. He came back with nothing, actually. What's happened here is that nobody expected it. Cameron didn't expect it. None of the European Parliament expected it. And I think that when he went over there, behind closed doors, he told them all not to worry because it would go his way, because that's how arrogant they've been about the whole thing. Underestimating the British public once again, as they always have with their superiority complexes. And so nobody is prepared for it. No, there's no contingency plan. There's no plan B. It never even existed because they really didn't think it was going to happen. So it's caught all of them by surprise.
Yeah.
And none of them know what to do. Now, they're all waffling. I mean, I've just seen somebody from Ireland stand up there and say, Northern Ireland doesn't want it. We voted to stay out of it. We don't want borders between the north and the south. All very commendable and all that, but they're in it. You know, they're part of Great Britain, and unless there's going to be another war over there, you know. Which,
well,
I clearly hope there won't be.
I think there's a bigger picture, though, isn't there, really? Because, like yourself, I've just been watching Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
But I also followed Marie Le Pen, who was the next speaker.
Well, yes, exactly. I did too, yeah.
She's actually saying exactly the same as Farage. And I also noticed when he was speaking, he had a number of people who were applauding him.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Oh, listen, this is not the end of it.
No.
Others will have referendums now. The
yeah.
whole thing is pulling apart at the seams, and they're all worried to death. And that's why they're basically threatening us.
But I think
a lot of threats came out in some of those speeches, you know. Particularly the one that says there will be no secret deals. I mean, they are coming down. They are actually laying down the law, like Hitler.
Yeah.
You know, saying none of you people will do any secret deals with England. In other words, you know, we will make the decisions what happens with the UK and the European market. You know, not you.
Well, let's...
you know,
let's,
he's saying that to all the European...
Let's look at the UK...
Well, you're not going to stand that.
Leapy, let's look at the UK for a minute, because that's even as interesting as what's happening in the European Parliament, because, the fact of the matter is UKIP gathered 13% of the electorate, and they ended up with one Member of Parliament.
This is lunacy.
Now, the Scottish Nationals, they ended up with 4% of the vote, and then... they get 56 MPs. And they have been quite happy to come down to London and do something which they're now moaning about, which is basically being able to affect decisions in the British Parliament or, you know, the United Kingdom to their advantage. Now, they've actually had something which has gone against them in the European Parliament by the Brexit vote.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting to see how Great Britain and the United Kingdom sort out their problems, because, as you just said, there is the problem with the border in Ireland. But it looks to me like some of these politicians are already talking a problem which would appear not to be there at this moment in time.
Well, it's not, Scotland is of course Angela Merkel, Sturgeon, as Nicola Sturgeon has absolutely jumped at this one. I mean, wow! Listen, we got a chance of a referendum for independence again. Yes, we'll go for that. And she goes down and talks to, for some inexplicable reason, the new mayor of London. I've been talking to him. She says, be fair. All she can think about is referendum for the independence of Scotland. Well, you know, quite frankly, I think the British people are absolutely heartily sick of all that. I think if the Scots want to vote for independence, let them have it, you know.
But again, leaping...
There still has to be a border right across the UK. There has to be another Hadrian Wall. I mean, there's got to be a border right across the UK, because the immigrants will flood into Scotland. Absolutely.
Yeah, but if you stay with Scotland for a minute, because, you know, you and I have grown up with nothing ever hinted at a border with Scotland.
No way. I mean, I've always loved Scotland, to tell you the truth. See, it's Scotland that actually doesn't love us. That's the problem. I love Scotland. If I see a football game and Scotland are playing somebody else, I cheer for Scotland. If Scotland sees England playing somebody else, they cheer for the other side. That's the difference. And unfortunately, that is the way it is. You know, they still go to the Battle of Bannockburn, and they still think that, you know, what's his name, was a hero, the outlaw
Robert the Bruce,
freedom, him.
Yeah.
You know, when he, in actual fact, he was actually betrayed by his own people. They put him up to Robert the Bruce. They put him up to they gave him up. They gave him up to the enemy. They didn't want him.
But I mean, the point really is, you know, that there are very, very deep things that run through everybody, all of us. And, you know, it's almost like, really, people have tried to paper over the cracks for donkey's years. And you can't really do it, because the way we're brought up and the way that we live in families and the way that we have the ideas of our parents, then our education system, etc., etc., it does form a very big base that we work from in our lives, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. I mean, it's odd. In fact, the United Kingdom, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, so on and so forth, are like a miniature European market, like a miniature EU.
Yes.
And you know, if one of them breaks away, if Scotland breaks away, it's going to be a blow to our union. Northern Ireland, of course, can't break away, and as I say, unless there's some sort of war. It's the same thing. We're leaving the bigger picture, and they want to leave the smaller picture. The disruption is the same, relatively speaking, you know?
Okay, so now, let's go to...
There's a hypocrisy here with the fact that that she wants to go for an independent Scotland, but wants to stay in a united Europe.
Well,
want to stay in the United Kingdom.
Exactly. Everything is all mixed up. And what is quite worrying is when you then look at what's immediately happened after this Brexit vote. You have David Cameron, who has immediately ran away from the problem.
Yeah, that's disgraceful.
And so,
but typical. I couldn't expect it any more from him.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, then you've got Jeremy Corbyn. At least, you know, whether I like or dislike, he's got 23, I think, against him now. All decided to run away from the problem. He is digging in. Well, I mean, it doesn't inspire confidence,
That's a different story, of course. That's a party trying to get rid of a loser. You know, that's a party trying to get rid of their leader, because he'll never ever. And I've always said it right from the beginning. Anyway, that it was like electing a hippie, electing him. You know, he will never lead the Labour Party to a victory ever.
You don't see alternatives.
That's what they're trying to get rid of him for. It's got nothing to do with Brexit.
Leapy, you don't see alternatives, do you? I mean, if you look at the Conservatives, we'll stick with them for a minute. You have the two front runners would appear to be Boris Johnson and Theresa May. Well, now, from what I've been following for quite a while, and obviously like yourself, you've been following these things, the Home Secretary has presided over a series of figures that we've seen in the press purporting to lead us to believe that there are thousands and thousands of people unaccounted for, illegal immigrants, people who have come into the UK via the European route with murderous sort of convictions behind them, and yet they don't know where they are. We've got people going through the courts and having the most ridiculously light sentences for murder and rape and assault, and yet I would have thought that the person that could have made a stand and say to Parliament, look, this is ridiculous, is Theresa May, who voted to remain in the European Union.
Well, why isn't she saying anything? You know, I mean, they do say their hands are tied with a lot of these things by Brussels, you see.
But isn't that a cop-out?
They always give.
Hmm? That's a cop-out, isn't it?
I'm not sure it is. You know, these judges, I think a lot of these judges' almost ludicrous decisions are in fact governed by Brussels, and they have to follow the rules of Brussels. And judges, you know, if they're really serious and sincere judges, they will follow the letter of the law to the end, irrespective of what anybody else says. So if they have to follow a some sort of Brussels legislation, they'll follow it because it's the law.
Okay,
even
but we
don't agree with it.
We've not heard from any collection of judges saying that if somebody murders somebody, it's ridiculous that you can only give X number of years or whatever. I mean, some of the judgments that you've seen and witnessed in the papers week in and week out have been trivial when somebody's been murdered or killed by a car. When
I know, yeah, there's something wrong with all of them, actually. As I said, I think a big computer should do it and do all the judgments.
Yeah.
I don't think a human being should be involved at all.
But I mean, where are the leaders? Because that's what I can't see. I can't see any Conservative leader. I can't see any... although I'll tell you who I did think came out of all this quite well. Two people. A guy who I didn't agree with for a long time over educational policies, Michael Gove.
Well, yes, he's there.
He's actually...
He could be
looked,
running and running for the...
Yeah, he's looked a bit more like a statesman. And I like there's a quiet air about Chris Grayling.
Yes.
He seems quite good.
I don't know much about him, actually, to tell you the truth. I don't think anybody does, do they?
Well, I mean, the thing is, they've got to have some leaders from somewhere. So, you know, these are names that I only throw out because basically I watched this morning and they were bringing out the health minister, Hunt, and on BBC Breakfast they said, well, are you putting yourself up for the leadership of the party? And with 2 days before he has to say yes or no, he still hasn't made his mind up.
Yeah. He said what?
That's ridiculous. Okay, I'm looking at your article, Leapy. I left this a little bit deeper into what we're talking about because you did say that you felt that there was too much doom and gloom. Your article doesn't really help us with that one, does it? Great Britain destined for an eruption of chaos and disaster.
Well, this week's column will, of course. Don't forget that last week we hadn't had the referendum when I wrote that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what the result was. No, I think it is a powder keg, and I still think it's a powder keg, and as it happens, it's oddly something I didn't foresee was the out campaigners of the far right. Now there have been a lot of racist incidents. They're now chanting the Polish workers and all that, to get out, we don't want you, we voted out now. I mean, I think that's disgraceful.
I agree, I think it's totally wrong.
Yeah, that's disgraceful. I didn't think it would erupt from that, but it could erupt from that. The whole thing is a powder keg. It's this immigration issue, and unfortunately the Muslim thing, and everybody has a go at me, and I say, racist, you know, but I'm not a racist, you know. And so, I'll quote the old, which is now becoming an old adage almost, you know, that not all Muslims are terrorists, but all terrorists are Muslims, you know. I mean, then it's as simple as that, really, you know. If you go through every terrorist event over the last 15 years, they were all committed by people of the Islamic faith. All of them. You know, it's just, well, you can't deny that. You can't say that's not happening, you know. And, of course, they are now ensconced in, not ghettos is the wrong word, no-go areas under Sharia law, and people are just not going to stand it. It will erupt. Something will happen. Somebody will go berserk with a gun in a mosque or something like that. You know, I'm always trying to say, in case it happens, people say, there you are, you shouldn't have said that because it happened. You know, I've been accused of being the instigator of Joe Zingbob's death in a letter I had today. Oh,
well,
you know.
No. I think the thing is, you see,
somebody will go berserk. Some right-winger, British white right-winger, will go berserk in a mosque and kill a lot, and then that will ignite it. What I'm saying is there's so much unrest in the country now, it's only waiting for one incident to ignite, and it will ignite.
I think part of the problem, Leapy, must be that if you allow an immigrant population into your country, be it the British community in Spain or the Pakistani community in Britain or whatever it might be, if you allow them to ghettoise areas, then I think you're really stocking up problems for the future. It doesn't matter which country and
without
which group
question,
of people.
Without question. It doesn't matter what they are. It doesn't matter what they are. But, you know, the Jewish people came to England, you know, after the last and during the last war, and set up areas, moved into areas. They didn't try and change their culture. They didn't. They lived quite happily under their Jewish religion in areas, you know. But they didn't. But they still lived under British law. These people don't want to live under British law at all. They want to live under their own law. They want to bury their women and stone them to death. They want to cut their hands off for nicking something, you know.
Well,
let's kill all the infidels, you know.
Let's knit two things together, because you've got Sharia law, you've got the Judaism court, you've got the Church of England, Anglican courts. They apparently are all allowed, as long as it's all done by consent by everybody involved. So that's why these Sharia courts are actually allowed, or have been process in the United Kingdom and elsewhere. Now,
yes.
This is the area where the Home Secretary should be making a stand and saying, sorry, if you live in Britain or if you live in Spain, you abide by British law or Spanish law or whatever country it is, and making exactly clear to everybody that you can't come in and just have your own court. But that's why these courts have been able to proliferate. It's not because it's only Sharia. Apparently it's the Jewish court, the Anglican court, and anybody else who wants to have a court. Apparently,
yes.
That's.
But their results that they have are results within their religion.
Yes.
And their religions don't go against British law. You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
you know,
I do.
They don't. You can't. You see, the Sharia, the are so extreme, you know, you can't allow courts that are going to give verdicts of stoning and and you can have four or five wives, and because if you start giving people the power to do that, we're in serious trouble.
Well, I have to say,
the Anglican Church might cast something on perhaps somebody saying you can't give somebody a room because they're a gay married couple. They may say this is not right and blah, 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 that sort of thing. But bury them and stone them to death. And it's too extreme. Their punishments are against British law.
But again, it's all leadership, isn't it? Because you're quite right. And the only person in the country who could really stand against that is probably the Home Secretary. I mean, the others,
I think they're all frightened. I think they're all scared to death of that tinderbox that I was talking about. That's what they're frightened of.
Okay, well, let's go away from the politics because it's been very, very depressing.
Well, let me just say just one thing at the end of this, as far as Cameron's concerned. I didn't quite finish that.
Okay.
Mr. Cameron should have stood up because he's so arrogant, he didn't think he was going to lose anyway, okay? So yeah. He didn't think of it. He probably didn't even make a speech of losing. He probably made that up the night before or made that up as he saw the results in the morning. He should have been totally impartial. He should have said, OK, we're putting this to the vote. There shouldn't have been any government paper that cost millions out or anything. It should have been a level playing field. And he should have stood there and said, I will go with whatever the result is. I will be totally impartial with this. And he should have a plan A and a plan B. And if the vote went the other way, as it has for him, they should have immediately stepped in and said, okay, this is what we've got planned for plan B. We are now ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And everybody would have said, okay, well, what a great leader. What a statesman. But he didn't, did he?
Well, I think I'd go even further than that, and I would say that I know it's clever to always say this after the event, but I would say that maybe the actual referendum could have been thought out a bit more. It was never going to be a simple yes or no, and maybe they should have had a first referendum saying, do we want a referendum?
Yeah, a referendum about a referendum. Well,
because, I mean, now you've got people saying they want a second referendum to negate the first referendum. Well, if that is, again, maybe voting for out, does everybody turn around and say, well, we want a third one? I mean, you can't keep doing that, can you?
They made the Irish do it. They bribed the Irish and they cudgeled them into a second referendum. Won't happen in the UK.
I've got a thought.
No one on God's earth it'll happen. If that happened and it went the other way, there would be rioting in the streets straight away.
Yeah.
Without question.
Leapy, I've got a thought for you because this is something that crossed my mind. You know, obviously, like a lot of people, I think very seriously about all of this and, you know, I don't take anything lightly. And I was trying to make sense of certain reasons why people have been so adamant that they want to stay in the UK and in the EU, and why those in the EU want the UK to be in the EU. There's only two countries in Europe with a bomb. One is France and the other is Britain.
Yeah.
Now, as they move towards 2019 and this Portugal Treaty, Lisbon Treaty, I think they call it, the idea, of course, is to have one force and basically all the police and the army all gather together. From what little I know of this, that's what I've read. If that had been the case, then one union would only have had one option with, you know, a nuclear disaster. Whereas now, at least there's a balance to this if this madness ever were to go forward. And I thought to myself, well, nobody's ever even thought about that, have they? Nobody said it anyway.
It's quite a mercenary look at it, but it's it's a fact. Yeah, absolutely.
It's something that stopped me in my tracks one day. I thought, well, nobody's mentioned this.
No.
And, you know, I hope that nobody's been anywhere near this. But I saw another thing.
Tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if Europe does manage to get over what we're living through now, the next thing is, you know, we're going to have all the American stuff that's going to come up. And that is not looking particularly good, is it?
Well, it will if we have Trump.
Yeah.
Trump goes in.
I'll send you, I don't know whether I can send you this actually. I've got this thing in front of me here, which is to do with Obama's top advisor as I'm reading it. Yes, here we go. I've got, it's the 1977 Stanford yearbook. I am Iranian by birth and of my Islamic faith. I'm also an American citizen and I seek to help change America to be a more Islamic country. Faith guides me and I feel like it is going well in the transition of using freedom of religion in America against itself. Yeah. And this is a lady called Valerie Jarrett.
Well, that's it. That's the plot. That's the plan. And that's the plan of all of them. That's the plan in the UK. Well, I'm amazed she's actually come out and said that.
Well, I was, you know, when you get these things, you think to yourself, oh, blimey, you know, another sort of piece of the jigsaw, which you don't really want to see. Because I mean, like everybody else, I don't want any of this. I want us all to get on with each other. But, you know, the thing is, look at Spain. We've just had another hung parliament. Where's it going to end? Because we've had 6 months.
The world is in turmoil at the moment.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is down to the Islamic influence, interference.
Well, Spain, I think less.
There's less of it here. There's less of it. Spain has always been torn between left and right, you know. You see, coming out of a dictatorship out of Franco, they've never really settled. They've never really settled after Franco. I mean, I don't know, but when I came here, I think Franco had been out of power for about 7 years, which was nothing, because all the infrastructure was still Franco and still Franco-run. And that took years, and still, it's still in place in many places. It's still the people support the Franco policies in power. And another thing, unfortunately, over here is a lot of the people that seem to get into power are Uncle Juan and Auntie. You know what I mean? It's a big family thing as well, you know.
Yeah.
You get people in positions over here of power who know nothing about it whatsoever.
Well, I stay with Spain because basically when I came away from the UK first past the post system, I did think that this proportional representation was actually a better system. But this is proving now that if you've had 6 months without a government, another election which still has a hung parliament, I think Rajoy is something like, I think 40 seats, I think it is, short of a mandate, if you like. You know, somebody's got to govern the country. You can't just keep doing this,
you? It's as I say, it's chaos at the moment. So,
and it's always easier, isn't it, to criticise? And I mean, I actually thought Rajoy seemed to be doing quite a good job, you know. And suddenly you've got these three people have come out of the woodwork. I mean, there's a new PSOE leader, this Podemos guy, Iglesias, and then the Ciudadanos. But I mean, the interesting thing is the vote from the last 6 months has changed slightly. Rajoy has got a little more support. The PSOE guy, Sanchez, has lost a little bit. Podemos stayed exactly the same, and Ciudadanos, they've gone right down. So I mean, somebody's got to break this deadlock. I mean, that would hint to me at King Felipe getting them all together and saying, for God's sake, we've got a great country, you know, let's get somebody to run it properly. And you know, Mr. Rajoy was doing a reasonably good job. Why don't you just support him?
They're all scream and shout.
Okay, well, look,
that's a bit too sane for this whole situation, Vince, I'm afraid.
I think sanity went out of the window yesterday in another way. First of all, Spain lost to Italy, which didn't surprise me, because Italy in the first half looked absolutely strong. Spain looked really as if they just didn't know where they were going.
They didn't seem to be playing properly somehow. It didn't look like the Spanish team I know and love, to tell you the truth. And of course, England, I thought that was like they were playing Saturday morning football in the park. I thought they were absolutely disgraceful.
Well,
they were all young, eager, and keen. He made another 6 changes, didn't he? You know, the team has never welded together, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right to make changes. You're supposed to make your changes after the friendlies. You have the friendlies, and then you make your team. And that's your team. That's your squad. You don't make 6 changes. I think you made half a dozen changes in the other last game as well, you know. These people must play together. And to play together, they have to play together, you know. You can't.
But what's really been...
individual players who are each brilliant in their own way on a pitch with each other, because they just don't know what to do. There was no direction. They were all over the damn place.
Well, they didn't have a captain on the field for my way of looking at it. It just didn't appear that, you know, there was anybody, like when you had a good captain in the past, you'd know that the captain has made a decision, and it probably in conjunction with the manager, whereas it appeared that the manager didn't have a plan, and there was no sort of leadership from the captain on the field.
I don't even know who captain was. Was it Rooney? Who was the captain?
I think it was Rooney, wasn't it?
It was Rooney. Rooney was off form as well, something terrible.
But he's never been a captain. I mean, come on. You know, anybody with a modicum of common sense would know that Rooney is not the leader of men. No. You know, I was very, very disappointed. But the one positive thing that's come out of everything we've talked about today is that you've got to have teamwork and you must have leadership. And we have a dearth of leadership around Europe at the moment, don't we?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely, all down the line. And unfortunately, our enemies prosper within chaos.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the real danger. They really do prosper, and they want chaos because they can maneuver with chaos.
Yeah.
When things are orderly and strong and solid, they can't get by, but they certainly can when it's like this.
Well, Leapy, what is your wish for the future now? What would you like to happen?
I would like to see some strong, optimistic leadership from the UK. I would like to see Scotland hold another referendum very quickly. If they want out, get out, so that we can get on with it and build a damn wall up. And good luck with all the immigrants coming in, because they won't get across the border that we'll have to build right across the UK. I would like to see them actually vote to stay in, to tell you the truth, if they have a referendum and we're still united.
Yeah.
I would like to see the European government, the European community, I would like to see them grow up and negotiate deals with us and respect our position and not punish us by, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we like bloody schoolboys, you know, school women, whatever, school persons. And I'd like to see England, you know, grow and expand and use now the world market. We can now make deals all over the world and we can negotiate and tie them up within a week.
Yes.
We don't have to go and ask with cap in hand if it's all right with Brussels, you know.
Yes.
You know, the opportunities and the optimism and the fun and the future to me is very, very bright. But we need leaders.
We need leaders, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, I'll send you the links later in the day as soon as I've got this all done. Have a great week, Leapy, and let's hope that by the time we speak this time next week, things are beginning to look a bit healthier.
Okay, yes, I agree, Vince. All right, my dear.
Thanks, Leapy.
God bless. Have a good day.
See you soon. Bye-bye. There's a boy, a little boy, shooting arrows in the blue, and he's aiming them at someone, but the question is at who? Is it me? Or is it you? Hard to tell into your head, but you'll know it when they hit you, 'cause they hurt a little bit. Here they come, pouring out of the blue. Little arrows for me and for you. You're pulling it off again, pulling it off again. Little arrows in your clothing, little arrows in your hair. When you're in love, you'll find those little arrows everywhere. Little arrows that will hit you once and hit you once again. Little arrows that hit everybody every now and then. Oh, 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 the pain. Some folks run, others hide. There ain't nothing they can do. And some folks put on armor, but the arrow goes straight through. So you see, no escape, so why not face it and admit that you love those little arrows when they hurt a little bit? Here they come, pouring out of the blue. Little arrows for me and for you. You're falling in love again, falling in love again. Little arrows in your clothing, little arrows in your hair. When you're in love, you'll find those little arrows everywhere. Little arrows that will hit you once and hit you once again. Little arrows that hit everybody every now and then. Little arrows.
again.